So I will fully admit, this is the craziest story in the whole entire Bible. I don't think there's any comparison here. This is one of the strangest, oddest stories you will ever find. It definitely makes you scratch your head. It definitely makes you wonder what's going on. And definitely, it makes almost no sense when you look at it in its context in the book of Numbers, right? For those of you that have been with us over the summer, as we've looked through the book of Numbers again and again, we see the book of Numbers dealing with things like complaining and serious issues and frustration of God's people and God kind of punishing his people every now and then to bring them closer back to him again. There's all of these intense moments in the middle of the wilderness. And then all of a sudden, it seems like somebody just kind of presses pause and inserts an outtake from the movie Shrek with the talking donkey and everything into the middle of the story of Numbers. I mean, it's that odd. It stands that much out of place in the story. And with all that being said, there's a lot of questions that the story of Balaam and his donkey actually bring up. There's a lot of things that we don't know. We don't really know who Balaam is. We don't really know much about Balak. We don't know why God let the donkey talk all of a sudden. It doesn't happen anywhere else that we know of in the Bible. It just doesn't seem to make all that much sense. And with all that being said, even in the midst of the questions, I love the story of Balaam. And I love the story of Balaam for a few reasons. On the one hand, it allows us to kind of come up for air in the midst of a bunch of serious topics in the book of Numbers, because it is a little bit comical when you think about it. In another way, I like the story because it allows us to like think back and dream in our minds on what it would actually be like to talk to a donkey, right? You go there when you read the story occasionally. That can be kind of a cool thing to do. But I think truly at the end of the day, the reason why I love the story the most is because the thing that the story does in a very creative way is it reminds us that God is active in every part of our lives. That's the truth. God is active in every single part of our lives, and he still is active in our lives today. You see, when I was a kid growing up, one of my favorite things that I looked forward to all year was when my grandma and grandpa would come and visit us in southern Minnesota from Detroit, Michigan. It was always an exciting time because they loved us. They spent a ton of time with myself and my four other siblings. There was always a lot going on when they would come to the house. But one of the favorite things that I looked forward to when they were there was playing chess with my grandpa. My grandpa is an engineer. I know some of you guys are engineers. I have huge respect for engineers. That is not my thing. My grandpa was an incredibly intelligent guy, very, very thoughtful. He could see patterns and other things that normal people couldn't see, which means he was really, really good at chess, right? And so for the whole entire week, my siblings and I would be just like scheming, preparing, trying to do everything that we possibly could to make sure that we could beat Grandpa at least once at the game of chess. I mean, we pawn rushed him. We sacrificed our queen early. We tried everything. And normally what happened is he would let us win once before he left. Of course, we thought we won, but you know how that normally works when grandparents come along. But it was always a lot of fun playing with my grandpa. Thinking back to that reminded me that the game of chess can be a really hard game to learn, can't it, for those of you that have tried? I mean, the rules are easy enough. There's not that many complicated things. The games can go fairly quickly when you think about it, but chess is still an incredibly hard game to play because there's a lot that you can miss while you get intensely motivated to play one part of the board, right? If you focus too hard on one part of the board in chess, you can lose the game on the other side. If you try to play one strategy too hard and you forget to adapt and react to what your opponent is doing, you can lose the game that way. There's a lot that can happen when you're not paying attention or you're not really aware. And so when you look out and you see the best chess players in the world, the very best ones are very intentional and thoughtful in the moves that they make. They're patient and they notice every single thing that happens on the board, and it takes way more time than I have patience for. Maybe you do too. But you know, even though that's true about the game of chess, that's also true about our own lives too. It doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't even matter really how religious you are. Every single one of us can live our lives in such a way that we miss stuff that's actually going on, important things that we really wouldn't want to miss if we knew about them. We can get so caught up with all the chores that we have to do at our house that we're out mowing the lawn and we miss our neighbor sitting on their front porch wanting to talk to us. We can get so tied up with work and thinking that we just got to work harder and put in more time to advance so we can support things at home that we miss our spouse and our kids crying out for a deeper relationship. But we can get so frustrated with things happening in this world that it just seems easier to sit in our room, to shut all the doors, and to binge watch episodes of the latest Netflix show that comes up, and the world just kind of passes us by. There's so much that we can miss when we're not looking for it, when we're not really paying attention, isn't there? And yet, in the midst of that reality, today we have this really random story of a talking donkey that comes forward and asserts to us that opening our eyes to what God is doing has the capacity to not only change our perspective, but also to change our attitude in life. Those two things, we'll see, are very intimately connected. You see, if you look at the story of Balaam, even though it's a crazy story, it doesn't actually start out that way. It starts out just like a lot of other stories do in the book of Numbers, with Israel wandering around in the wilderness. A couple chapters earlier, the people of Israel refused God's promise. They said, we don't want to go into the promised land. It's too big. It's too scary for us. We would rather go back to Egypt. And so God, since that point, is letting Israel aimlessly wander around in the wilderness. And this day is like every other day for Israel. The sun comes up, they pick up camp, and they wander around some more. But on this day in particular, they come across this area called Moab. And the king of Moab is this guy named Balak, who I said, like, we don't know much about him, but Balak has heard a little bit about the people of Israel. You see, a little while earlier, the people of Israel had taken on the army of this people group called the Amorites. The Amorites had this vast army. Israel had taken them on, and they had soundly defeated them in battle. It wasn't even close. And Balak had heard reports of that fight happening. He had heard reports of that war, and so he started shaking in his boots a little bit when he saw Israel show up on his doorstep. Israel was big. Israel was huge. At least they would eat them out of house and home. There wasn't enough resources there for everybody, but at the most, they would completely annihilate the Moabites. And so Balak sends out for this guy named Balaam. And for everything we don't know about Balak, we don't know even more about Balaam, okay? Balaam is this very, very weird kind of guy. We don't really understand what his background is. We don't know a lot about him. We know that he's the spiritualistic person. Some people say that he's into witchcraft. He's not connected to the people of God in any way, but he makes a living doing divination, spiritual type things. You know, that like dark side of spiritual things that we don't really want to talk about. That's what Balaam is interacting with on a daily basis. And apparently, according to Numbers, he was pretty good at it. Kings paid him large sums of money to go up and bless and curse different people in their neighborhoods, in their cities, in their world, and I guess he was pretty good at it. And so Balak calls him in to do the job again, and this is the message he sends. He says, look, Balaam, a vast horde of people has arrived from Egypt. They cover the face of the earth, and they are threatening me. Please come and curse these people for me because they are too powerful for me. And press pause on the story for a minute. Right away, there's kind of a problem with Balak's perspective, isn't there? His perspective, his view in life is completely and totally motivated by fear, isn't it? And on the one hand, that makes a little bit of sense because all he's gotten about Israel is some bad news. He's gotten some scary news about the battles that they've been in the past, but he's not looking for any other news either. He's not searching to see what Israel will do next. He is just right away letting fear guide all of his actions, motivate everything that he does. He is so certain that Israel is coming to wipe them out, that this will never end well, that it's going to be the end of his reign and it's going to be the end of the people of Moab. And so he calls Balaam in because he doesn't know what else to do. But that's kind of the issue when we rely solely on our own perspective in life, isn't it? I mean, your perspective is a very special thing. It's not just this random thing that pops up every single day. Your perspective is built off of all of your history and all of your experiences in life. It's what makes you unique. You can bring things to the table that nobody else can. But at the exact same time, if you just rely on your own experience, if you just rely on your own perspective, some of you know this because you've lived this out, it can take you to some pretty dangerous places. It can lead you down some pretty weird paths. It can lead you to make assumptions about people that are completely and totally incorrect, but you just get that feeling based on your perspective, so you cast them out because you don't want anything to do with them. But maybe the biggest problem with relying on your own perspective is this. A poor perspective actually ends up derailing your attitude in life. Now, this is where Balaam becomes such an important character in the story. I mean, for this guy named Balaam, this is just another day. This is just another job for him. He's hired to curse this people group that comes into the area. He's actually getting paid maybe a lot more than he normally would be because there's a king and a nation involved, and Balaam is ready to go. But then God appears to him. God speaks to Balaam and says, Balaam, you can't do this. He says, these are my people, the people of Israel. I've blessed them. You cannot curse them. You can only say the words that I want you to say. And Balaam seems to hear God and seems to understand, but on the other side, there's a really big payday. And this could be a really good job. And so Balaam wants to go anyway. He kind of ignores the voices in his head, and he sets out on his way with his donkey. And the moment God stands in his way, we get to see Balaam's attitude completely and totally plummet. And this is where the story gets crazy, isn't it? You heard me read it a moment ago. Balaam starts off on his way with the donkey. There's the angel of the Lord in the middle of the road, and the donkey can see it, but Balaam can't. And so the donkey kind of flies off the road. She doesn't want to go the way that Balaam wants her to go. And so Balaam freaks out. He gets angry at her. He beats her even, the text says. But he doesn't think twice about why the donkey would do anything like that. He doesn't think twice about the voice that he heard from God saying, don't go. He doesn't think twice that anything else could be happening because he just wants to get to the place where he feels like he needs to be. So he pulls the donkey back on the path and he tries again. And the story ramps up a little bit this time, right? The angel moves down the road and there's just a little bit of a crack between the angel and the wall of a vineyard. And Numbers says, when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it tried to squeeze by. It's trying to do the right thing, everybody. It really is. It tries to squeeze by and it crushes Balaam's foot against the wall. And we can just imagine what Balaam would do, right? This is the equivalent of hitting your finger with a hammer when you're trying to go after things, right? This is probably a steady stream of blue words, upset at the donkey once again. He beats the donkey again, the text says. And still, Balaam doesn't get the hint. He doesn't think anything of it. He pulls the donkey back on the road and is like, we are going, let's go now. And so he tries to move on again, and this time the angel completely and totally blocks the road. And I love this. The donkey's like, nope. I'm not doing this. And she just lays down in the middle of the road. It doesn't matter if Balaam's on top of her. She is not moving anymore. We are done with this whole entire process. And at that point in time, Balaam completely and totally loses it. He is absolutely furious with her. He starts screaming at the donkey. And we don't know if this is worse than the previous times, but he beats her, it says, with his staff this time. He is so furious. He's about ready to take the donkey's own life. And at this point in time, God opens the mouth of the donkey and the donkey starts to talk. Numbers says, what have I done to you that deserves your beating me three times? It asked Balaam. And this is where the story loses me every single time. Balaam doesn't say, wait a minute, why are you talking to me? Balaam doesn't stop and kind of wonder why his donkey is reacting this way. I don't know about you, but if I told my dog to like go stay over there in the corner for a little while I eat dinner and he said, no, I would prefer to beg at your feet, I would probably freak out. But Balaam doesn't. Balaam is so upset in this moment that he just reacts like his donkey and he are having a conversation. He says, you made me look like a fool. If I had a sword with me, I would kill you. How angry is Balaam? He's stuck in his own perspective. He's stuck in his own way of life, and his attitude has completely fallen off a cliff. He has had it with his donkey. Now, I know that none of us here have talked with a donkey before. Okay, maybe you've talked with a donkey, but the donkey hasn't talked back to you legibly. Nobody? Okay. But at the exact same time, I think every single one of us has been in a place very similar to Balaam. Because it's so easy for us to fall into the trap of leaning only on our own perspective, of thinking our way is best, of thinking that our way is the only way, of thinking that our plans are the only plans that need to work out and nothing else matters. And when things begin to fall apart, we do what Balaam did. We get upset. We get frustrated. We start to ask questions. We say, why is all this stuff happening to me? Why are bad things only happening to my friends and in my life? How come I'm putting in all of this time and have nothing to show for it? Right? I mean, I know I've asked questions like that before. But there's something limiting about all those types of questions that we get asked when we get frustrated, isn't there? It's all about me. It's all about things needing to fit into my plan, into my perspective, into my life. And we miss everything else around us. And I think many of us know this from experiences. Most of the time, those moments just end with us angry, don't they? With questions unanswered, with an attitude that's sour, and ultimately we just end up taking it out on the things around us, whether that be our family or the dog or our coworkers, or maybe we just kind of cut ties and bail and go run off somewhere else. But the thing that's so amazing about the story of Balaam is that it doesn't actually end that way. It doesn't. Because right in the moment where it seems like everything is just going to fall apart, God opens Balaam's eyes and he sees what's been going on the whole entire time. He sees everything that has just happened through a new lens, and his life changes in an instant. You notice that he falls down with his face to the ground. He repents. He says that he's sorry to God. He realizes everything that could have happened. He says, God, I am at your mercy. Just tell me what to do. And God has him go to bless the people of Israel. But you can see how that kind of happens. Right? Balaam is just doing another job, waiting to get paid. Balak is just wanting to get people off of his property that he's afraid of. Israel is just kind of camping out there in the wilderness, completely unaware to everything that's going on. But God was working to bring his grace even when no one was looking for it. Even when no one could see it, even when everyone was so stuck in their own perspectives, God was working to bring his grace. And that's how we see things play out in Numbers chapter 24. If you read through the whole entire chapter, Balak takes Balaam to three different spots, you know, just trying to find the right holy one to where he can get just the right curse across over the people of Israel. And every single time, Balaam can only utter blessing over the people of Israel. And the third time, the third place that they go to, Balaam utters words, you heard me read them a moment ago, that are absolutely profound when we realize what he's saying. Balaam says, I see him, but not here and now. I perceive him, but far in the distant future. A star will rise from Jacob. A scepter will emerge from Israel. Who's he talking about? It's the Sunday school answer. There you go. He's talking about Jesus. A spiritualistic dude that just blesses and curses people for a living says this. He talks about the one who's going to come from the nation of Israel. The Savior of the world who is going to bring saving forgiveness and grace and mercy, not just to the descendants of Israel, not just to Balaam's descendants, but to the people of Moab that would be living around the time of Jesus and then after. He's talking about everything that Jesus is coming to bring for people then and for people like you and me even today. And it makes me wonder, what do you think Balaam's attitude would have been? If he got up that morning saying, today I'm going to proclaim the future Savior of the world. What do you think Balak's response or perspective would have been if he realized that his nation was playing host to the nation that would bring forth the Savior of the earth? What would have happened with the people of Israel if they would have realized what was being spoken of them and of their future as they were camping under that ledge that day? Maybe they would have just turned around and tried to go to the promised land again the way that they were supposed to. But we can only imagine. And sometimes when we think about our past or even this last week, we can only imagine for our own lives too, can't we? We can only imagine the things that we've missed when we've been so stuck in our own perspective, in our own attitude, in our own way of life, that we've just kind of missed some things around us. You know, shortly after the time of Jesus, a guy by the name of the Apostle Paul would come around, and he was one of the greatest missionaries in the early New Testament, and he would talk about our struggle with perspective and attitude in this way. He says in a letter that he writes to some Christians in Ephesus, he says, "All of us used to live in sin, following the passionate desires and inclinations of our sinful nature." I love this. He says, But God is so rich in mercy, and he loved us so much that even though we were dead because of our sins, he gave us life when he raised Christ from the dead. Connected to the Old Testament, Paul is basically saying, you know, what took place with Balaam, it has happened and continues to happen in our lives and in our world today. Even when we get sidetracked with our perspective, even when we get stuck in our own attitude, even when we try to do things in our own way, God is still working to bring us grace. In fact, God has brought us the greatest gift ever of grace, even when we weren't looking for it. And in the person of Jesus, God did something so jarring to get the world's attention that we are still talking about it even today. He took on flesh and he went to the cross. A man of love allowed himself to be captured and crucified. And he made it abundantly clear with the things that he said, with the way that he acted, that he had come to give up his life in love, not just for the people that liked him, but for the people that didn't like him too. Not just for the Israelites, but for everyone in that day and age. Not just for people then, but for people like you and me here and now. For people like Balaam and Balak and everywhere in between. And if that wasn't jarring enough, eyewitnesses stake their lives on the reputation of the statement that 3 days later, Jesus rose again from the dead. That he walked out of the tomb a living, breathing human being again to show that he really was someone different, that he had really come to bring something new, a new perspective, a new attitude, a new type of life. You see, that's exactly how Jesus comes to meet every single one of us. It doesn't matter your background or your history or your past, the risen Christ lays all of his cards on the table and says, "This is my promise to you. This is everything that I've come to do for you, sealed with my death and resurrection. I've come to bring you a new perspective that you can't find anywhere else. I've come to give you a new attitude that you can't get anywhere else. I've come to bring you a new life, one that's not rooted in the people or the things of this world that will let you down, but one that's rooted in me, in my forgiveness, in my value for you." It's a free and open invitation to every single one of us, and Jesus simply invites us all to turn and follow him with our lives. Now, I don't know where you are today. Some of you I do, but some of you I don't. I don't know if you're at a point in time right now in your life where you're still wrestling with the resurrection of Jesus. Maybe you don't want to say it because you want to be a good church person, but you're still not sure if this is totally for real. You're still not totally sure if you can take Jesus at his invitation. And I want to encourage you, if that's where you are today, to keep wrestling with that. To keep pushing back and seeing if Jesus really is true to his promises in your life. To ask questions about it. You're welcome to do that here. We're all at different places in our world. But keep wrestling until you come to a conclusion for your life. But for the large majority of you here who I would assume would stand up and say, "Yes, I consider myself a follower, a disciple of Jesus today," I want to challenge you strongly to pray over the next week, over the next month, that God really would open your eyes to the things that he's doing around you. I mean, we can see in the story of Balaam, it is crystal clear that things do not happen randomly. Nothing exists by chance. And so think about it. What is God actually doing in your life? How is he working at your job, in your house, with your kids, with your parents, at school, in your relationship with your friends, in your neighborhood? Because he is working. He does have things that he's inviting you to step into, good things, because he wants to bring his grace through people like you and me, just as he brought it through Balaam. And so step back and think for a second, what would happen if we opened our eyes? What would happen if we intentionally looked to see where God was working each and every day? What if we connected God's action with every single thing that we did in our lives? What if we said, God is going to be involved in every moment of my life, whether big or small, and I just want to be ready for what he wants to do through me next? Quite honestly, I believe that if we did that, God would honor it to dramatically change this neighborhood and this city in ways that I'm pretty sure would blow us away, because, come on, our God can make donkeys talk. God has given us everything. What if we opened our eyes? Said, God, lead me forward.